it's important to publish something that looks as if you take this seriously. You need to put some time and effort into how you explain your gender pay gap.
Hello and welcome to this Expert HR podcast. I'm Noelle Murphy and today I'm joined by Mark Crail, Content Director at Expert HR, who has also been running our gender pay gap reporting service. Mark is going to give an overview on the first wave of reports and provide some useful do's and don'ts for gender pay gap reports going forward.
Hello Noelle, good to be here.
So Mark, over 10,000 organisations published their gender pay gap report by the deadline of the 4th of April 2018. Can you give us an overview of what was learned from these reports?
Yeah, I think three things. First, many employers have discovered for the first time they do actually have a gender pay gap. I think it shattered the complacency of some organisations that previously thought, well, we pay men and women the same. But as we've discovered, there's a bit more to it than that. Second, employers have learned that their employees and the wider world do care about this. There's been lots of media coverage and many employees have had questions to ask, and it doesn't look like it's going to go away. So that hasn't always been comfortable for many employers. Thirdly, we've learned that it can be done. You know, more than 10,000 organisations have published their gender pay gaps, almost all for the first time. And I think few of us expected that many to get there by the deadline. It's a real achievement, actually. Unfortunately, that does mean that around 1,500 organisations who should have published have still not done so.
So can you tell us what we learned from the first wave around the actual size of the pay gap?
Yeah, it's been interesting looking at the data because it does differ from the previous data we had. Previously, we had the data from the Office for National Statistics, from the Annual Survey of Hours and Earnings, and that was giving us gender pay gaps of around 17-18%. Actually, once we've looked at the company data that's coming through this process, the gaps are more around 13% for the mean and 9 or 10% for the median. Now, there is a good reason for that. It's not that the ONS data was wrong, it's that this looks at things in a different way. But the most important difference is that actually there are differences between organisations and within organisations. So you might have two companies, each with a gender pay gap of zero, but if you merge their data together, actually a gender pay gap does emerge because you've got a higher paying organisation, which is largely male staffed, and a lower paying organisation, which is largely female staffed, for example. So it's shown us that we do need to get to grips with some of that data in quite some detail.
Is it useful for organisations to use the data to make comparisons?
A lot of it's useful, but there are limitations. So the gender pay gap figures, the mean and median gender pay gap figures, are really useful and employers ought to look at those. They ought to look at similar organisations and see how they compare. Not as grounds for an excuse, not saying, well, actually, we're just as bad as everybody else in our industry, but as a way of beginning to get to understand what's happening in your company and in your industry and address some of the issues that are causing the gender pay gap there. The gender bonus gap data, on the other hand, I think really does not help employers. It's particularly unhelpful in terms of comparing between organisations. The definition of bonus for the gender bonus gap is so wide. It includes traditional bonuses, it includes sales commission, it includes one-off small payments, perhaps for an employee of the month, that really you're not even comparing like with like within your organisation, let alone between organisations. So employers are going to have to get into their own data, unpack some of that stuff about what's happening in their gender bonus gap, sort out whether they've got two different types of bonus that are driving a difference, and really understand what's going on there before they can make use of that data.
So we know more than 10,000 organisations published their gender pay gap report, and I think you mentioned around 1,500 didn't.
That's right. The Equalities and Human Rights Commission has already written to nearly 1,500 organisations telling them they should have complied with this legislation. Now, I imagine there'll be a few of those who don't meet the threshold of 250 employees or have some other good reason why they weren't required to publish. However, in a group that size, there's bound to be a lot of organisations that really should have done but haven't yet complied with the legislation. I think the EHRC is going to want to work constructively with those organisations and help them towards publishing as soon as possible to comply. I think if anyone is then recalcitrant, if anyone is then refusing to publish for whatever reason, the EHRC does have some teeth. It can issue them an instruction, a legal instruction, to publish. If they fail to do that, it can take them to court. if they fail to comply with a court order, of course, we're then into whole other areas of legal non-compliance. So yes, there is something that's going to happen to those organisations. They need to be aware of it. If they haven't reported, they need to get to grips with it now.
And so there's obviously a significant number that haven't reported, but amongst those that have, and where perhaps the data doesn't look entirely robust, do you think anything will be done with those organisations?
I do, but quite when is another question. Obviously, the EHRC has to work through quite a number of different companies here, 1,500, before it gets to that. It said it's going to prioritise those who didn't report above those who failed to report properly. Perhaps once it's dealt with this 1,500, it will have the resource to get on and talk to those who clearly have failed to report properly. And that's, I think, in most cases, you know, there's no unwillingness to report properly there. They may have made errors. There are gaps in the explanation about what you should report and what you shouldn't report, which they may have interpreted differently to other organisations. It's not always very clear. The gender pay gap regulations are incredibly detailed in some areas, but in other areas they have almost nothing to say. So, for example, if you're in the hospitality industry, they don't explain to you what you should do with tips. Are those base pay? Are those bonus? Where do you include them? How do you include them? There are a whole load of other areas there that still need to be addressed properly, and so the employers can comply with the legislation in full.
So it's a bit of a learning curve for all parties, really, given this was the first year.
Absolutely. I think, you know, given the scale of this and the fact that it is the first year, we've done incredibly well. I think things will improve further down the line, but actually it's a good start.
OK, so with the snapshot date of April 5th already passed, organisations can begin to work on their report for 2019. Mm. So based on the experience of Expert HR's gender pay gap reporting service, what does a good report look like?
Okay, I think there are three things to look at: presentation, the data, and the narrative around it. So presentation, it's important to publish something that looks as if you take this seriously. You know, you need to put some time and effort into how you explain your gender pay gap, how you talk about it to employees. And it's not just employees. You know, we already know that employees have got questions about their company's gender pay gaps. But once you've published this, it stays on your website for 3 years. People coming to potentially work for you and people coming for interview are going to look at this stuff, and they may make a decision to come or not to come to interview based on how seriously you appear to take your gender pay gap issue. So that presentation issue, I think, really is important. Secondly, the data. We know the 6 sets of data that people have to publish in the legislation, but there's a lot more you can publish, whether publicly or within your organisation, which sheds a whole lot more light on the gender pay gap. So, for example, it's interesting to know not just the percentage gaps, but also what that equates to in terms of pounds and pence. And I think one thing that's particularly interesting and useful to look at is what's happening on the boundaries of the pay quartiles. What are the pay rates at those quartile boundaries? What are the typical jobs found at those quartile boundaries? Quite often people have been surprised to discover that their top quartile actually comes a lot further down their organisation than they might have expected. So there's all sorts of things that you can learn from looking at the data in more detail, from pulling more out of it and from publishing more of that, or at least sharing it.
There's a lot of really good information there around the data and a lot of things that people can take away. And I think the third thing you're going to discuss is the narrative, which kind of draws it all together.
Absolutely. It's the explanation. It's the description of your company and what you're doing about it. The data is all very well, but actually, you know, why have you got this gender pay gap? You've looked at the data. What's driving it? It's no good just saying, well, we've got more men in senior positions and more women in junior positions. That's not really an explanation of your gender pay gap. That's just describing the basics of it. You really need to get into the detail of it, work out what's going on, tell people a bit more detail about why you have a gender pay gap, what you're doing, and look at things like, how are we addressing this? And it's not just a pay issue. It's a whole range of other things. How are you recruiting? What sort of qualifications are you asking people for, or experience are you asking people for when you recruit them in the first place? Is that actually necessary, or are there other ways of getting the right attributes from people who can then go up the organisation? What are you doing to train people? What about a mentoring programme? What sort of equal opportunities policies generally do you have within your organisation? So it goes a long way beyond the 6 sets of data when you're explaining your gender pay gap and what you're doing about it.
Well, you're kind of describing a cultural change there, really, aren't you?
I think so, yeah. I think it's a big thing. You know, this has opened up a whole area of debate, and it's going to be interesting to see where this goes over the next few years. I think, you know, you already mentioned a while ago that the snapshot date for the 2019 reports has now passed, or the 2018 reports that have to come out by April 2019. So actually, if you want to start addressing your gender pay gap, you've already left it too late for your second year's report. The things that you do now might begin to have an effect by the time you get to your third year report, which will have to be published by April 2020. So that seems like a long way down the line, but actually, if you're not doing something about it now, you're still going to be in the same position in 3 years' time as you were when you started.
That's a very good point there. This is a big change, isn't it, for organisations to actually publish the kind of information that they have. And some might be a little resistant to kind of making that information public or putting it in the public domain. Is there anything that an organisation could do to kind of explain those figures or add more clarity?
I think there is. You know, because you're required to publish a report doesn't mean that you can't do more than that. Okay, there's a report that you might be happy to share in public, which will have a certain set of data in and a certain level of detail. But, you know, the main audience for this primarily is going to be your own employees, your existing employees. So there's probably a lot more that you can share within your organisation, perhaps a second level of reporting, perhaps by sending that out through line managers, perhaps in forums, perhaps you have an equalities working group or whatever, a staff council, trade unions. You can share more information there so that people understand what's going on and what you're doing about it without having to put everything on show to the wide, you know, big wide world and have your competitors know exactly how much you're paying people. You don't have to do that. There can be different levels of reporting, internal and external. As long as you meet the external reporting requirements in the regulations, you are welcome to do more than that.
And I suppose it demonstrates a commitment to actually addressing the gender pay gap as well, doesn't it, if there's more conversations going on with other bodies internally?
I think it does. You know, I've already mentioned the possibility of staff councils, trade unions, equalities groups within your organisation. Year one, I can quite understand that people wanted to do all the technical work, get the report out the door. Going forward from this, year two, year three, beyond that, why not include those groups in the discussion about what sort of data you're going to gather and what sort of data you're going to publish and what actions you're going to take as a result of what you've discovered?
Great. Thanks for that, Mark. A whole load of really useful information there for people to use when they're putting together their 2019 report. And I suppose one of the primary things is while the actual gap may not have changed much, they can certainly do an awful lot more around the narrative and the presentation that they use. If you're interested in reading more about measuring and reporting a gender pay gap, then our how-to guide on the Expert HR site is a great place to start. Thanks a million for joining us.